Hello and welcome to the Wonder What podcast. My name is Rob.
And I'm Robbie.
And we are here to talk about Eastgate.
You weren't sure for a second there.
Stuff.
I had to think about it.
I had to look at you just to get reassurance.
You're on target.
We have a purpose, right?
That's
right. We have a purpose. We're doing this for a reason.
I think so. So what is our purpose and our reason?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that's the question we've been trying to puzzle through for a long time here. What is our reason? What is our purpose?
What is life? What's the meaning of life?
Hey, but I want to start with big news.
Okay.
Somebody wrote to Eastgate and said that they acknowledged that they were actually not afraid to admit that they listened to this podcast.
That was really nice. Yeah. We won't give her full name, but we will say that Miss Shirley
just did a wonderful thing by encouraging us and letting us know that she listens.
So, I just stared at that email and reread it over and over every day.
That's very sad.
I eventually wrote her back.
Yeah, so nice. There we go. So
Someone listens.
So we verified at least one listener.
That's right. So, it's in writing. I've saved her email forever in the cherished place.
I've had people verbally tell me that they listen, but so that would be, I've had one person verbally tell me. No, I've had two people. So that's three.
Yeah.
So there's three.
I think I've probably had about that many. I'd have to sit and think about
it. But they could be the same people.
That's true. We haven't really compared notes on that one.
So I think we're safe in still saying four. That gives us a little
nice
wiggle room
round
there.
Number. Yeah. That's right.
So hey, welcome the four of you who listen to this podcast.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. And we'll try to do our best to just have a nice little conversation here. And again, hopefully you're not driving or doing anything important at this moment because...
And we will try not to burp in the microphone. I knew you'd love that.
I'm not even sure where that came from.
That's
but
real.
That is too real. That's way too
real.
Well,
I was just feeling...
What, are you going to burp? Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, I was suppressing one. We're here at the microphone's very full right now.
We are. It was a delicious dinner, Robbie. Not that anybody cares about that, but Robbie made a great dinner for us, and I overdid it.
We shared in the making of it. You smoked a pork tenderloin, and I made some sides to go with it, and we were hoping that when everything went in the oven, we could come record the podcast, but time got away from us, so we ate first and then came here, and... Mm. Now we're just trying to take deep breaths and
So we might make it a short podcast, which would be merciful to
That's
everyone,
right.
to ourselves and to those who are trying to endure this at the moment anyway.
So. But we do want to tell everyone Merry Christmas.
Yes.
We love you and
we're a few
glad
days,
to be celebrating this time with you.
That's right. We're a few days out from Christmas and we had a milk and cookies event at Eastgate. It's been an annual thing. I think we talked about this on the last podcast. I don't honestly remember exactly how we started doing milk and cookies, but we've been doing it for years now.
Yeah.
What I think happened was I think that we were teaching on Wednesday nights going through the Old Testament, and I just felt like we were close to Christmas and we needed to party, and so milk and cookies just made sense.
Yeah.
So we actually set up like we were going to do a regular teaching, and then I had some of the youth positioned by a table in the coffee house area, and
that's right.
Once everybody got there and we got done with the worship service, I said, "Yeah, we're not going to do the teaching. It's a night of milk and cookies."
And then Liz and someone else, I feel like carried maybe Lance and Liz, walked out with a big table full of cookies.
Yeah, there was the youth. That's what I was saying.
I had the youth positioned
back there to carry it out for us. And Liz had bought all the cookies and
got them all set up.
Yeah, and bought all the milk. She does that every year, actually.
Yeah, she did it again this
Liz
year.
Liz is the office manager at Eastgate. And how long has she been the office manager?
Long time. She's been the only office manager we've ever had.
Yeah.
But we didn't have one at all for a while. So
I'm going to say 12 years.
At least.
At least that.
We're
Poor
coming
lady.
Up on.
Poor lady.
What,
She's
April
been enduring 15th? This for this long. That's intense. But anyway, she always is in charge of getting the milk and the cookies and the supplies and stuff. And she apparently likes shopping. I take her at her word for that.
I hope so.
Hate it. So it's very nice that she does that.
Yeah, and then Janelle has kind of added to it, and she does another aspect of it.
Yeah, Janelle
where
is,
she comes up with the game ideas and different events. And
Janelle has expanded beyond. She's actually only in charge. I mean, her official title is Kidsgate Pastor, but my goodness, she just expands into so many other.
Yeah, she kind of manages all the special events, which we try to do about one a month.
She actually manages a lot more than that, too. She's taking on a lot. She's taking on a pretty big role at Eastgate.
Yeah, that's just one of the things. But
it's really nice. It's nice because I'm getting old and getting tired.
Yes.
And so it's nice to have someone with youth and
energy
and innovation.
Yeah.
It's really
kind of. I mean, you were 30, right, when Eastgate started? Or,
I was. Yeah, I was so, 31 or 32, I think, actually, when it was.
I guess 30 when I moved to Florida.
That, in fact, my oldest daughter, Jessica, was talking to Janelle at one point saying, you know, you keep waiting for the 30-year-old Rob to show up and bring all this energy to it, but he's been gone for 20 years.
That's right. That's right.
And that's the truth.
Well, we've talked about, too, how both of our parents were retired by the age we are. We're in our late 50s now, and they were pretty much mostly retired. My dad kept a few clients on as an accountant, and my mom always had a little bit of part-time job, just more for something to do, not like they really needed a lot of money. But for the most part, they were, you know, 90% retired, and we're like,
Well, I mean,
we're tired.
We talk big. Like, oh, we're tired. We retire, but you know, there's no way we.
Oh, I'm never going to
entirely too invested.
I don't plan on never doing nothing.
That's a double negative, and so I don't think you can do that.
I don't plan on not doing anything.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I don't plan on inactivity.
Just less of maybe some of the stuff I'm doing.
Yeah, maybe transition to different roles there. More as guidance counselors than as
the actual physical laborers maybe out there.
But either way, it's good. And I mean, we still got enough energy to do what we're doing, and it's been kind of cool. So.
Yeah.
The kids were all lined up to see old Santa Claus, to tell him what they want for Christmas. But things aren't like before, because little Joey wants an Xbox, and Lisa wants an iPad Air. Michael wants his videos to go viral as Santa slumps in his chair. Mary wants a Nintendo 3DS, one that's colored lime. And Santa got sad when Timmy asked for an Android, but not the robot kind. Then it was Sally's turn, and she looked at him with such a grin. Santa asked what she wanted, and this is what she said to him. I want a ukulele for Christmas to write and play my own songs. I want to be like ukulele, I can have my own sing-along. George Formby is my ukulele idol, odd for someone of my youth. But a ukulele for Christmas, it's four strings and the truth.
And we're getting geared up for Christmas Eve. Christmas time is always a busy time for everybody at Eastgate, but we're gearing up and getting ready for the Christmas Eve service.
Yes,
which is always a lot of fun. I think we talked about that on the last podcast.
We did.
We got special music. The kids are going to do stuff. The British Reading guy is going to be there. So
we always usually try to do a staff video. We're kind of working on that now. A little last minute. It's not that far away.
Everything we do is last minute. Yes. What are you talking about?
We've had a couple of good ones. I'm not sure that we're going to outdo that this year.
I think that's the problem, is that I think we hit our peak last year. So
we've
done two.
So we've had two kind of good ones. And this one will probably be short and sweet. But it's funny. I feel busier. You'd think last year would have been like, we can't
do anything.
With all the hurricane
and everything.
I mean, 2 months after the hurricane. Yeah. And this year, it's kind of like, we can't do it.
This year's, for some reason, very busy. Yeah. And I don't know exactly what the deal is on that. But we're hoping everybody's having a good Christmas. And I know there's still people that are displaced. I've got several friends still living in trailers.
Campers
in front of their house. And I know that's tough. But hopefully the joy of the season transcends that, and there's a sense of peace and harmony and goodwill towards humanity.
Yes. Well, one of our friends that is still in their camper in their driveway, she was talking to Bob and April, and she was saying they're hoping to maybe be in by March, you know, in their house.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, Bob did the sweetest thing. He works at the soundboard, and I came by there on a Saturday, and he had just cases and cases of Christmas supplies in these big plastic bins, and he
said very specific
it was Lighted Village,
a Christmas village,
and he set it all up on the soundboard, which, if any of you have been there and seen it, it's just a great thing.
It puts me in such an immediately good mood the moment I see it.
It's really nice. And he worked for hours Saturday, and he goes, well, this isn't even half of what I have.
Oh, but
he
says I can't set it up at home,
and so I'm just going to go ahead and set it here. And then when the worship team was practicing, they were practicing. At one point, they looked back there, and they said, is there anyone there? They can't hardly see over that village. It's kind of high. It's like a foot high.
It's worth it. It's just
for a month. Oh, my gosh. It's so cool.
And it's got little details, like there's little street lights that light up.
Oh, yeah, a little fire pit in the city square.
If you haven't taken the time to go over and look at that, it's really cool. I remember years ago, we happened to be over at the old Woodlawn building, Woodlawn Methodist Church, when they were still there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember what the reason for us being there. I think I was meeting with Ron Ball, who was the pastor at the time. Mm-hmm. But I just remember they had a Christmas village set up in their foyer. And it just was beautiful to me. And of course, we've been very non-traditional in our approach to, you know, in terms of the building setup and decoration and everything like that. And you'd think that that would be something that I would look at and say, yeah, we don't want to do that. But I'm telling you, I was drawn to it. I loved it. And then when Bob set that up, it's just immediately cozy to me.
It is so awesome. And I think you said your mom used to set up something
like that too. My mom used to, maybe, and that may be it. Maybe it's harkening back to something that I remember as a child.
Yeah, we never had that. And as we've shared before, we went 10 years or more without doing Christmas at all.
Oh, back when we were in the crazy
church. When you and I
were
together in the early part of our marriage. And so when we did start celebrating Christmas, we already had little kids. We had very little money, and we've just kind of little by little added to our Christmas decorations. Yeah. And someone gave me one little house one time, but it's not even lit. It has like, it's like you put a candle in the bottom of it. We came home one day and one of the girls said, oh, look, Mom, there's a start of village for you. And I'm like, yeah, just mock me. It's fine. It's not electric at all, like anything with Bob has. But I did like that little house, and I've kept it over the years. I think someone gave it to me, and I do love them. I told Bob, I said, you know, this is so great. We're going to come to expect this every year now. I hope you're not going to mind continuing this.
I hope he does, because it was really cool. Too. And if you haven't been by there, the four of you, if you haven't had a chance to go look at it, you definitely should go. Look at it and enjoy it. And
yeah, we're trying to get my daughter Jessica is trying to do Instagram updates for Eastgate. And she was meant to do one last Sunday and she forgot. Take a picture of that and post it on our Instagram account. I think it's Eastgate PCB. But you can look us up.
Yeah. If you're on Insta.
We do try to have a few updates on there.
Yeah, we try to keep up with that like the cool kids do.
Oh, yeah. Them kids.
Actually, Instagram's the only thing I really... I've pretty much checked out of Facebook. I mean, I'll post stuff there for Wonder What to let people know that I've posted on the Wonder What site, our blog site.
More of an information kind of place.
It is, but, you know, it's just hard for me. Facebook's just hard for me. I'm not trying to be anti-Facebook, but it's just not an enjoyable experience for me given this the vast.
I don't think a lot of people would defend that right now.
Probably
I think a
not.
Lot of people
probably
have
not.
Very serious anxiety and sometimes, you know, depression from looking at it. And
especially around this time of year.
Oh,
in fact,
goodness,
what's one of the things that I'm going to talk about on the Sunday before Christmas? Just trying to get a good perspective on if life is rough and you kind of feel like your Christmas isn't that spectacular, or maybe you get down because Christmas means it reinforces a sense of loss or something like that. We're going to talk about those things and how we can get a different perspective. I'm not going to give it away, and we'll talk about it.
It's easy to get back into it because I know you just worked on that today. I'd like to say something on your behalf, and that is that when there are holidays like this, basically it just means you work twice as much because in order to take a few days off, you have to do your messages early so that when the kids come into town and you can take some time with them. And
don't you know, pastors only work one day a week. That's all. We got Sundays and that's it. You know, the rest of the time, it's
there's certainly been plenty of people that said, so what is it that you do?
What would you say you do here? Honestly, I don't know. I'm always looking for something productive to do. But
yeah, right.
Yeah,
anyway. You take on too much most of the time.
Oh my goodness. You know what day it is. I'm pretty excited. Oh, come and take a look at the tree. It's gonna be about 7 foot 3. Come and take a look at the Christmas tree. It looks good to me. It's such a lovely green. Come and take a look at the gifts. The paper looks nice before it's ripped. Come and take a look at the wrapped up gifts. Whoever packaged this clearly practiced it. Ba 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 ba. Happy Christmas.
So what else we got going on for this podcast? What are we going to bore everybody with?
Oh, great.
Oh, you're not going to bore them. I'm sorry. That was mean. What are we going to tantalize everybody with? The fascinating insights.
Far.
Okay. What are we talking about?
Oh, I think we were thinking about maybe discussing what our mission is, what our vision is as a church, right?
Yeah. Well, we talked about last week about like what church is, what yes. makes Eastgate kind of unusual on mm-hmm. the landscape of churches. And it really came down to identifying what our core belief about what church is.
Yeah.
A gathering of people, a community. And, I thought maybe it would be cool to kind of talk a little bit about what our mission is. Because
yeah.
people ask that a lot of times. What's your mission? And we don't necessarily have like a formalized mission statement, though we did get together years ago with Dan Crute, mm-hmm. who was on the board at the time before he and Patty moved away.
Yeah.
And we did hammer out some really interesting perspectives on yeah. what our priorities
over
and values
over the course of many Saturdays.
Yeah, yeah. And I really appreciate all the people yeah. that got involved and helped with that. But you know,
so it, what was the I remember
so
we
our
had
consensus,
a phrase pretty much we
yeah,
came
we,
up with
we
right?
came up with a phrase, but it's a clunky phrase. Like I mean, like okay,
it's
so
too long for a t-shirt, I'll tell you that.
Way too long for a t-shirt. So like really cool churches that know what they're doing, churches unlike Eastgate. You know, they'll come up with a quick, short, succinct little phrase that, you know, encapsulates what it is that they use to motivate them. We didn't quite do that, but we did come up with, kind of a philosophical starting point.
Yeah.
And basically it was that our purpose is to advance God's kingdom by loving God and loving people, which is a basic idea. That goes back to what Jesus said were the most important priorities when he was asked, you know, what are the most important laws or what's the most important
yeah.
command? And he boiled it down to two. As far as we know, he was the only rabbi who melded the two together of Deuteronomy 6, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and Leviticus, love your neighbor as yourself. Mm-hmm. And he said that the whole of the law and the prophets rests in this. In other words, this is God's intent. This is what is going to encapsulate the kingdom of God and the values of God if they're going to be lived out on earth as they are in heaven. So.
Cool.
Loving God and loving people is it. So we have a purpose to advance God's kingdom by doing that. Or we could say by experiencing and expressing God's radical grace. Because that has a two-pronged element.
Yes.
Experiencing and expressing. So we want to develop community, but we also want to be an active force in the larger community around us.
I think that, we couldn't make it any more succinct than that, really. I mean, you could almost go with just the first phrase if you wanted to, but I felt like we all were very adamant or, I don't know, there's probably a better word than that because that sounds almost angry, but about getting the concept of grace
right
in there because that's just been huge. That's a big part of our identity as Christians, and it's something I think, you know, Eastgate has been striving to really
yeah.
promote.
And honestly, I think that's, I mean, I believe that that's one of our best witnesses
yes.
to the world around us is to develop a community sense where mm-hmm. grace is actually lived out.
Yes.
I just think that one of the things that, you know, people talk about mission and purpose for the church, and I just feel like that 2 Corinthians 5, when Paul is talking to the Corinthians and explaining that, you know, this is God's given us this task of reconciling people to him, to God, that this ministry of
yeah.
reconciliation, this is primary. This is the underlying motivation for everything that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I think that especially in the last 30 years, the American church has become so moralistic. Not
yes.
that morals aren't important, but moralism is a problem because it turns everything into a legalistic, you know, it turns people into assuming that God is like Santa, that,
yes.
you know, he sees you when you're sleeping, he knows when you're awake, he knows when you've been bad or good, and if you're going to have anything positive going on with God, be good for goodness sake. And
yeah.
that is not the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
That is not what it is that we've been called to. We're called to reconcile people to God because God loves us just as we are, not as we should be.
Right.
And in that reconciliation, he begins to transform us. So I don't know. We took on the role. I feel like the church kind of took on the role of being the moral police.
Yeah, it makes me think of those conversations you had last summer when someone was doing some work for us. And he was a believer.
Oh, right. Yeah,
yard work type thing. And he was a real sweet guy. Yeah. Very dear, very sincere believer, but was adamant that moralism was the most important thing.
He kept pressing me. He said, do you remind your people to repent? And I,
yes.
And I have to. I had so many problems with just that
everything.
Statement alone.
That's right.
They're not my people.
I was holding your finger up in the air while he's talking.
They belong to God as far as I understand that. But yeah, you know, I mean, of course. I mean, every time we're teaching out of the Word, we're encouraging everyone. We're encouraging myself and everyone that's in earshot to turn from our own self-will to God's ways. But that's not the means of getting right with God, which
right.
he
that's
and I had to go
two.
Round and round. That's right yeah. about. And yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah, those were intense conversations, and he meant well. I know he did, but he was almost a panicky sense of, if you don't tell them, how will they know they're doing wrong? And it was a real fear of dependence on God and any kind of dependence that God could relay that information to a person individually or convict their heart or convict them in any way.
Yeah, as though if we don't make sure that we've pointed out everybody's sins and flaws, that somehow God has no capacity or ability
to do it himself.
To do that.
Yeah. How did he get to know this? Yeah. How did he get the news about what's right and what's wrong? And what if that ever changes?
Certainly Paul in the New Testament and the church has a long history of discussing moral issues.
Sure.
Certainly we talk about
those
things.
That's part of it.
Right. About a reshaping of our moral values to come into harmony with what God originally intended. But we've got the cart before the horse on this. If we're not reconciling people to God, and if people aren't, I believe, if we're not reinforcing this idea that we're connected, we're reconciled with God, regardless of how well we do this or not, if we don't start from that premise that God loves us, we're always going to be falling into a legalistic concept of
I remember going to a Bible study. I think it was with the youth or a special event or something. And I think it was you teaching, but it doesn't really matter. It's asking the kids, if you could boil Christianity down to one word, what would it be? One descriptive word of Christianity. And I mean, the kids, faith, love, hope, all those things, Christ, crucifixion. And you're like, no, you know, and not that any of those things were wrong, but I remember, do you remember what you settled?
I am totally lost. I have no idea what
really
story
you don't remember
this is.
Because I still remember it. And I think of it a lot. And I think it goes along with what we're talking about. And that is, if you could boil Christianity down to one word, it was relationship. And I thought,
that sounds familiar.
I've thought about that so much since then, because if you start with that, then the other things fall into place. You don't have to
legislate
morality. You don't have to come up with all the other things. You just, if you have that relationship, God can connect
with
you. Not that he can't use other people to speak to you about some choices and decisions. Obviously, that's part of being in the body of Christ,
is
we learn from each other and iron sharpens iron, that kind of thing. But start at that point. God loves me. He loves me as I am. And move on and let him sharpen.
In fact, I remember what we're talking about now, because I drew a cross for them. And that was the point, is that even the cross represents the relational aspects. Reconciled with God being the vertical line. Reconciled between, you know, fellow human to fellow human being the horizontal line of the cross. Everything about it is relational.
Yeah.
The gospel is relational from beginning to end.
And what's too bad is when you teach moralism, it actually detracts from relationship.
Yeah.
It is just a do's and don'ts, and you can keep God at arm's length as much as you want if you just feel like you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. And, oh, yeah, you stay back here. I'm following the rules.
Yeah.
It doesn't require you to be close to God. It just requires you to follow the set of rules.
Exactly, and put on a good show.
Yes.
I mean, make
yes.
sure that the outward projection is appropriate and fits in with the narrative that we're trying to put, that people are trying to push, in terms of the gospel being about cleaning up everybody's morals,
right?
Which
right.
it will. I know, you know, it's a crazy thing to.
Yeah, that's the thing, because you're not trying to say.
I'm not trying to say morality doesn't matter.
Right.
It certainly does, but it's as I said, the cart before the horse.
Honestly, I think our moral choices often are our biggest testimony to people, but I think that again, they can see motive. probably just as well as anybody. And so if they, you know, we're all going to be a little bit inconsistent and not like, you know, there's that. But I think that, you know, they can see through. I think they can see if it's a genuine commitment or not. And so.
That's right. And I mean, ultimately, God's the only one who's going to be able to judge that.
Right.
Those determinations. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing, to be able to be willing to trust the Holy Spirit enough to put that control in His hands and not feel that it's necessary for us to make that judgment or determination mm-hmm. about everybody else.
Right.
You know, that's above our pay grade.
Mm-hmm.
It's above mine anyway.
Oh, yeah.
That's you know, the purpose, the mission behind this is that
say it again, the whole thing together.
So the whole thing together is that our purpose is to advance God's kingdom by loving God and loving people, or you could say that we are experiencing and expressing God's radical grace. That's what this is about. And you can't have been at Eastgate for very long without realizing that we do place a heavy emphasis on grace, on God's mm-hmm. grace. But I believe the reason that we do that is because as a community that values teaching through the Word, and especially going book by book, grace seems to be the primary thematic institution
of
the
New
Testament.
You can't preach on it if it doesn't come up in what you're teaching, you know, in book by book, verse by verse. If it's not coming up, how do you preach on it? So, I mean, it's obviously in there.
Right. In all fairness, somebody could say, yes, but you're talking about your interpretation of what the book by book and
sure.
chapter by. And that's true. But I would say that I would challenge anybody to contradict the idea that grace is a primary theme
mm-hmm.
of the New Testament and the Old Testament. Actually, it's just it's more nuanced in the Old Testament in that it's harder to recognize on the surface.
Mm.
But it's definitely there and it's definitely at work. And it's the primary message that God is trying to lead humanity towards when the full revelation of God's grace appears in the person of Jesus.
Awesome.
Yeah, a lot of talk there. Sorry.
Did I zone out for a second?
You did.
I'm back.
It's okay. I'm used to that. I look out on a sea of faces in the morning. They're doing the same thing. Like, yeah. Is he still talking? Yeah, okay. But anyway, so that's, you know, that's one of the things that we try to achieve at Eastgate. And none of it we do very well. But I mean, you know, community is important to us.
Mm-hmm.
I want us to see to it that community is prioritized over institution. Like
mm-hmm.
in my thinking, anything that we institutionalize, which happens, that's not institutionalizing something is not a bad
right.
thing. We're just saying that we're doing it. You know, we hold to this. We do this on the regular, but all of that stuff has to be seen as stuff that we hold loosely. If it in any way compromises our ability to be together as a community.
Right. I think that that's a challenge for
it is.
Everybody. I mean, I'm a person of routine and I have a tendency that if it's on the calendar, it needs to be done.
Hmm. You are? Really? Mm-hmm. I would never have known.
Don't know
that.
If you knew that about me. But I've learned to embrace some of the chaos or even an occasional change of the schedule. Like last month, we didn't do Night of Pies and we've done that every year for so long. And I think we had a change in the staff video this year, too. And I was like, you know, and that's probably me getting older, too. It's like, I'm okay. We skip an event here and there. I'm good with that.
The main thing is just
should be okay.
Yeah. And obviously, there are people that would want certain things to happen or not happen or whatever. And we're never going to be able to please everyone. But the main thing is we never want to get into a situation where we are working to keep a program going.
Yes. Yes. And a big part of what the staff does is we meet every 2 weeks. And after every event, Janelle's real good about cataloging and
after action
documenting.
Reports, that's what she calls
after
them.
Action
reports. I think it's a military term, actually.
Yes, yeah. She did work at the Navy base for a year or two, I think. And I mean, I know she worked there. I think it was a couple years. But yeah, and I think that's where she started doing that. And then she pulls that notebook out every time and looks, well, last year we did, and before we do something, last year this is what worked. Yeah. Last year this is what didn't work. This is about how many people came and we hated this part and we loved this part and this worked well. And it's really been super helpful, but it also helps us to be flexible and change things up or some things like never do this again. This was a disaster.
I think we got more in that pile than anything
There's
else.
Plenty.
Never do that again.
Yeah.
Never
yeah.
speak of this again.
I mean, we tried a lot of things and there's some ideas from us, some from other people. Mm-hmm. And some of them just don't work. And that's okay.
That's been one of the challenges of being a church that is planted outside of, and planted. I say planted so loosely. Like we said over and over. Yeah. The Eastgate's a church by accident. This was never our intention, but God had an intention. I embraced that.
Mm-hmm.
But to be a group of people who is outside of an established tradition, like in a denomination mm-hmm. or something like that, and to be people who are honest about the reality that the New Testament does not include specific instructions for
of how.
These things. So, well, you know, to have that open horizon in front of us is both beautiful and challenging
mm-hmm.
because it's hard to know, you know, is this going to actually be helpful? Is this going off the rails? Mm-hmm. Is this still within orthodoxy or whatever?
Right.
So it's always a challenge. It always requires us to be very prayerful when we do anything or establish anything, but we keep the main goal in mind, and that is to establish a community where grace is experienced and encouraging people to express grace into the world, because that's the gospel mission, as far as I understand.
That's right.
Yeah.
So if that answers any questions. I don't know if the four of you had any questions about why didn't we do this or why do we do this. We're just kind of taking it a day at a time, month at a time, and
I would say I'm still feeling like, you know, the expressing of it into the world around us is still something I feel like we could be doing more of.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, you know, you and I talked about this. I mentioned it, and you kind of went catatonic on me, but you know, I feel like there could be places for corporate outreach, but it would have to, you know.
My eyes went crossed, but yes, when you
the reason she says
I have bad experience, but just like a lot of people, I mean, even at Eastgate, they weren't terrible. They were definitely more less risky than the crazy stuff I did when I was a kid, which we've talked about before, witnessing in Laguna Beach or whatever, on my own and not really knowing anything about God or the Bible. And so what we had done before, way back when, was more servant evangelism, like free car washes and stuff like that.
Christmas
that was supposed
wrapping,
to be a way
I remember
to,
we did that.
Yeah, that's right. Christmas wrap, free, you know, wrapping gifts for free and then just saying, hey, we're from Eastgate. And they wanted to know. Honestly, half the time they didn't really even care, I don't think.
No.
Which is fine.
We didn't see the fruit from it like other people saw mm-hmm. that were pursuing those things, and that's fine. But just it didn't appear to be something that was it had a definite feel of spinning the wheels. And it just you know, it didn't seem to be.
Well, it's funny because even every year
No, it's okay.
We try to buy a gift for a simple gift for every store in the strip mall that we work in, and Janelle or Liz or
that
someone,
we have our church in. You mean the church?
What'd I say?
You said where we work.
I
guess it is
church,
kind of
Eastgate
in that
is.
Sense. But yeah, we're the Eastgate.
And I mean, it's just like usually like a $5 big box of chocolates or something,
yeah,
or $10
it's nothing much. But
they bring it to each place and just no strings attached. Just here's Merry Christmas from Eastgate. You know,
we want to be good neighbors.
We know our neighbor and. Thank you or whatever. And sometimes they just like back away, hold their hands up. No. You know, and they were trying to figure out why and they never really quite got a clear answer. But they're like, we don't know if we thought, you know, if he accepted it that, you know, he would be obligated in some other way. But I mean, we're trying to also that I feel like that's a very easy form of being a witness or just being kind to our neighbors. And
because I see what you're saying there. So the
yeah.
when they were trying to take the gift to mm-hmm. them, the people weren't accepting it.
They weren't. Not everyone. I think almost everybody did. There was just one or two people that were a little suspicious.
Because as soon as the church shows up with something,
I think there's
immediately,
an agenda.
And mm-hmm. and that is one of those things that's an unfortunate reality about that. There's a sense of you know, the give and take on this. Like, okay, well, we'll do this service for you, but we do expect you to come. And
yeah, and it's not just churches. It's honestly
everything
businesses
in a
everywhere.
Consumer society like that.
You get something free, then you're on their email list forever, or whatever. So, yeah, it's not. Anyway,
but I still want us to be open to the possibilities of how God could do that. I am not a street preacher. I'm just not. I was talking with someone the other day who is, and
yeah.
I certainly admire that and appreciate that. That's just not me. And so I've been intrigued with, we've talked about it before. We were going to have a meeting right before the hurricane. We're intrigued with the idea of doing some sort of micro missions that aren't necessarily just out, you know, pushing direct evangelism, but out doing good within the community and it being a witness and a reflection back on the kingdom. And I'm intrigued with those concepts and
ideas. Well, I think like there was so much of that done after the hurricane that it kind of like whet our appetite.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what else can we
do?
Can we like all get a donation together and get a bunch of little trees and then just go around and start giving them to people? I mean, I just think that would be really fun. So many people need trees. You know, something like that I feel like would be really awesome.
Yeah. So we're still open and praying about, and I know that Julie Higby has definitely taken up this challenge, and she's been leading a small group meeting on the second Sunday of every month, right before the main teaching, or
Sunday
the main
morning.
Service on Sunday mornings
9 o'clock,
in one of the kids' classrooms, just to kind of encourage and dialogue on ways in which we can, you know, represent the kingdom in our neighborhoods or things like that, kind of following on Lance Ford's
Next Door as It Is in Heaven.
Yeah, somewhere. And the missional essential teaching that he did. So, I know we'll get there. If one thing I would say, Eastgate's never been in a rush. Nothing ever happens fast at Eastgate. It doesn't seem like.
No.
I mean, unless there's an emergency or something, you know, got to go. But by and large, we move at a pretty slow pace in that. And that's okay. I don't think we have to be in a rush. The world around us is rushing like crazy.
Hasn't always worked well if we've rushed into almost anything.
That's true.
I kind of feel like we need to mull some things over.
It takes me 5 days just to think about something.
That's right.
But yeah.
But that makes me think of, too, though, when you're talking about our mission as a church and small groups, you're thinking of this would be an upcoming meeting probably sometime after the first of the year that you're talking about doing on Sunday mornings also.
Yeah.
Or just an 8 week or 6 week.
Yeah, just a short, actually about a 4 week thing on just this very thing that we're doing on the podcast. And that is talking about Eastgate values and priorities and the things that make us unique as a community. Make sure that we are on the same page on that. Not like a class.
Is it Eastgate Elementals?
Well,
is that
what we've taught that before. I don't know if we're going to call it that or not.
Oh,
maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. I haven't hammered all that out. Everything's moving slowly, I said.
Oh, yeah. But you and Janelle are talking about starting to put that together a little bit, I think, right? So.
Yeah. And I believe, that's right.
And it'll be 6 weeks, you're thinking?
4 weeks.
4 weeks, okay. So I think Julie's going to take one Sunday off when you guys start that.
I think so. I talked to Donna both, who both have small groups in the mornings at that time. I don't want to interfere with what they got going on. But Donna gets together with, I think Gail Williams is working with her on that, doing a recap.
Yeah.
We've talked about that before, the recap
teaching.
So
yeah, that seems to be, in general, what's working the best for Eastgate since the hurricane, and we went to one service at 10. Wednesday nights aren't really picked back up in any way, and so any small group that it wants to get together mostly are looking at Sunday mornings and 9 o'clock, and those seem to be the best for people's schedule right now. So
yeah,
and middle school meets at 9 and high school's after service. So
yeah, so we'll see what we can put together on that. See if there's an interest in it. We'll probably do a sign up just to see if there's an interest and then go from there.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
think that's about everything we really had thought of, and now we're very, very sleepy.
Yeah, we really are. Well, and I'm sure that, and I'm thinking about the poor people listening to this. They have to be like struggling at
this
point.
Especially if they ate a meal, anything close to what we ate. But goodness. Yeah. So
I think we're going to make a short little podcast. This is our little Christmas podcast.
And the last episode in season two, and we'll start a new season next
year. It just sounds so like...
Official.
Yes. That's hard for me to imagine that as being like season two. Wait till you hear what we have in store for season three.
Quit making fun of us.
It will be more of the same, but even sleepier.
So everyone, hope you have a Merry Christmas, and we'll see you in 2020.
Yes, and we... pray that God is with you and that God blesses you, and we look forward to what the new year has in store.
Hope you can join us on Christmas Eve.
Yeah. Yeah. So, speaking on behalf of Eastgate, we're learning to love God, learning to love others.
This is our story so far.
We'll talk to you next year.
With the games of Orientum, bearing gifts, we travel so far. Fear and fountain, moor and mountain, from young star.
Music for the Wonder What podcast was written and performed by Vortex, Lee Rosevere, Darren Hoder, Simon Panrucker, and Maya Solovey from the Free Music Archive.
Facing never so.